Hey there, Weber podcast listeners. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter so you only have the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Dating can be a complex social activity that involves meeting new people, developing romantic relationships, and navigating various challenges along the way. From online dating to traditional courtships, there are many different ways to approach dating, and each comes with its own set of expectations, norms, and challenges. Ultimately, the experience of dating is shaped by a variety of factors like cultural values and social trends. But dating in Vermont can be a unique experience because we are a small population and tight-knit communities. So how are people in Vermont dating? What does a dating pool look like? And how do you meet someone you don't even know? Today on the show, we're going to dive into what some call the bleak world of dating in our state. To help us on this journey into the world of dating, I'd like to welcome our first guest. That's Marla Goldstein, a dating coach and founder of G-Spot Relationship Coaching. Marla, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Connor. Pleasure to be here.
So Marla, let's just start with you telling us a little bit about who you are and how you got started being a dating coach.
Yes. My name is Marla. Pronouns are she, her. And I am primarily a dating coach for hot mess and inexperienced singles. And most of the work that I do is about helping my clients get clear on what they're looking for, raising their standards, and in turn, dating people who are right for them. And I have been a dating coach for nearly 3 years now.
So when you say hot mess and inexperienced singles, what does that mean?
That's a great question. So it means different things to different people, but those that are most naturally gravitated towards me are primarily folks that really have not necessarily been in maybe healthy relationships, or dating is something that gives them a lot of anxiety. It's something that they just don't get the process of it, what is appropriate on the first, second, third dates. And they just really need help getting a foundation of what they're even looking for to narrow their search to make it easier to navigate their dating pool. So maybe they don't have much experience dating, and that could be because relationships were not really a priority for them, or maybe they just have not had good relationship role models, so they don't even know what a healthy and functional and sustainable relationship looks like. So those that really are starting from ground zero are who I really enjoy working with.
So people who are new to dating and looking for your services, what can they expect from you, and what does your job entail?
Yeah, well, it's so different for everyone because our dating lives are so nuanced. We're all coming at it from different angles and we bring different life experiences into dating. But what I'll always do when someone expresses interest in working together is I'll just have a phone call with them that's usually around 30 minutes to an hour, where I'll ask pretty much the same questions to each of the folks I'm talking to. Things like, can you walk me through what your dating life has looked like over the past few years? Where do you find that you're most struggling? What would be your goals that you would want to work towards if you made the decision to invest in your love life? What are you hoping to accomplish by working together? And then from there, I'm able to tell them honestly if I feel like I'm a good fit to support them and what they're working towards. And if I don't feel like I'm a good fit, I'll definitely tell them that because coaching's an investment and I want to make sure that their needs are getting met and their expectations are definitely getting met.
So walk us through what the difference is between a dating coach and a therapist.
Yes, a very, very common question that I get. So coaching is more action focused and more forward momentum and results oriented. And while it's important to keep in mind the holistic personality and experiences of somebody, I am not trained to necessarily go back and help process things that have happened in folks' pasts. I'm not able to make any diagnoses. I'm really there to help them get clear on what it is that they're looking for and make actionable steps towards getting there while being held accountable by somebody who knows a lot about this particular subject. So therapy is more all over the board. You can go to a therapist. Of course, there's specialties that other therapists have, but I feel like with therapy, they go back into your history and there's a longer assessment period. With coaching, I meet my clients exactly where they're at today. I listen to what goals and aspirations that they'd like to get to in the next few months, and we then begin to make a plan to help them get there.
So what have you learned about Vermonters who are dating and people who are maybe looking to find love or not?
I think our state in particular can be a little bit challenging to date in. Of course, it's possible because Vermonters are dating as we speak, but the fact that it's not super populated and there's some really small towns and rural parts of the state that don't really have access to larger dating pools, it's a lot of people feeling like they are dating someone who has already been dated by other people that they know, or the dating pool for what they're looking for, just the size of it is really not there.
So how do people navigate that conundrum of people dating within their social circles and friend groups?
Yeah, I wish I had a clear answer for you, Connor. I think it really comes down to having an open mind and getting creative. So unfortunately, it's not like we can just magically bring more people in Vermont to increase the size of the dating pool that we have here. But what you can do is if you're on dating apps, for example, you can increase your distance radius that you're willing to travel. So you have access to maybe even parts of New Hampshire, New York, Canada, Massachusetts, as well as Vermont. Maybe if somebody has already dated somebody that you know, that can be challenging to decide that you also want to date that person. So just checking in with yourself and what your boundaries are when it comes to potentially having or starting relationships with people that other people in your life have been involved with.
From what you've seen, are people dating casually? Are they dating for love? Are they dating for sport? Like, what are you seeing in terms of trends of how people are dating?
It is all over the board. I've worked with folks that are ready to find their life partner right now. I've worked with folks that have never dated before and don't even know where to start when it comes to figuring out what their standards are, what's not negotiable for them. They might not even know if they're looking for a longer term or a shorter term thing. So because I have a large Instagram, well, not a large Instagram presence, but I have an Instagram presence, and that allows me to work with folks from pretty much all over the world, but everyone that I have worked with is within the United States. And I have worked with plenty of folks that do not live in Vermont that have found me through social media. So the dating pools for them and their expectations are different. Like, I had a client who is from the South, and she is in her early 20s, and she was ready to find her husband. And I don't really see that with the folks that I will work with here in the more northeast part of the US, that the pressure of finding that at a younger age isn't as harsh up here.
And you talked about you help people find their standards. What does that conversation look like? And how should people be checking in with themselves when it comes to opening themselves up to dating?
Yeah, so our standards are a really beautiful thing because they're grown from life experiences that we've had that made us feel like we deserved better. So even if you don't have much experience with dating, there's a lot of media that we consume where relationships are involved. So for example, if I was working with somebody who doesn't have an extensive relationship history where their standards can be grown from, we can talk about what they've seen, maybe their friends or family go through, as well as what they've witnessed in the content that they're consuming and what they think would or would not feel good if similar situations were to happen with them. So our standards are really an opportunity for us to affirm what we are inviting into our life and what we are absolutely not inviting into our life.
Now, one of the things I think is fun for people to talk about are first, second, and third dates. When you get the butterflies and you're trying to figure out if this is somebody you like or don't like, when it comes to setting expectations for that, how do people, like, what are people's expectations and what should they be?
Okay, so you're asking about navigating first, second, and third dates and what isn't appropriate for them?
Yes, and I guess it's more like, because it's going to be different for everybody. So how people come to terms or figure out what those dates should look like?
I think the core question after you've met up with somebody that you can ask yourself was, how did that feel? Do you even want to see this person again? And so it will either be a yes, a no, or an I don't know. And for those that are coming to me with the I don't know, I'm then able to ask more deep or detailed questions like, okay, well, what was their sense of humor like? What does their day-to-day routine look like? Do you feel like you're compatible in terms of like who you are personality wise with them? Was there an equitable amount of talking time split between the two of you? Were they taking up too much airtime? Did you feel like the date was too long? Do you wish that it ended earlier? So there's all these logistical and deeper questions that you can think about when you're not sure if that first, second, or third date went well. And those questions that I'll typically ask those I'm working with have come from my own experiences with navigating those beginning dates of getting to know someone.
Now, I think one of the first things that we think about, Marla, when on a first date is, what does the date look like? What are you seeing? Are you seeing like these big bachelor style dates that are grand? Are you seeing more just simple hangouts at a coffee shop or at a bar?
Well, I think of Vermont dating is very casual. Like people just, maybe they'll do something outside or they'll meet at a bar or a coffee shop. So those that keep up with me on Instagram know that I have a very, very strong stance on what the first date in particular, when you are meeting up with somebody, should look like. I always advise for it to be under an hour if possible, and in a very casual setting where if you are not feeling it, you're able to comfortably leave. So perhaps going on a 4-mile hike with somebody on your first date who maybe you're not even, you're taking separate cars, maybe you're carpooling with them, so you're stuck with them for that whole time. Like, just think about if you were to realize 10 minutes into this date that you are not into the person. What is your exit strategy? So I am a huge supporter of first meetups that have a very easy exit strategy and the time constraints are barely there. We can almost do anything uncomfortable for an hour. You know, if the person is just talking about themselves or saying things that really do not resonate with you, up to you if you want to leave earlier, but most people will just wait out the hour. And then a lot of the work I do is help people compose messages to convey like harder conversations, like not interested messages and things like that, just to keep ghosting at a minimum, but always under an hour if possible with a very clear exit strategy.
What does that exit strategy look like? Because I feel like saying goodbye can sometimes be really awkward for people because you're like, all right, I'm in this situation that I don't love. What are your recommendations to help people keep it under an hour? Is it just a time commitment afterwards?
Yeah, time commitment afterwards, maybe even a lunch break hangout. You know, I have 12 to 1 today where I can meet up with you at X place if you want to grab a cup of coffee or a tea. So it has that very organic parameter for when they know it's the middle of the workday, you have to go back to work after it's done. Or going into it, you can let them know I'm around from 5 to 6 on Friday. Then it's my friend's birthday party that I have to go to, but happy to see you for that hour if that works for you. And even if you don't have a plan after, I don't think that there's necessarily, if you're not being entirely truthful with setting that time parameter, I think that's morally okay. Like, it's really that time parameter exists just to help if you're in a potentially bad situation, you can just exit it easier. But if you feel like you don't want to be untruthful, then definitely plan something that's an hour after your date starts. So that is a truthful statement.
We're continuing our conversation on dating and what that looks like in Vermont. We're talking about good dates, bad dates, and everything in between. We're also going to dive into the etiquette and safety practices for people who are getting back into their groove. Now, listeners, according to Pew Research Center, nationally, 1 in 10 partnered adults, meaning those who are married, living with a partner, or in a committed romantic relationship, met their significant other through a dating app or website. Now, 1 in 5 partnered adults under the age of 30 say they met their current spouse or partner on a dating site or app, and about 25% of partnered lesbian, gay, or bisexual adults met their partners online. Now, Marla, one of the things you do as a dating coach is you help people with their online dating profiles. Tell us what people need to know and what people should and shouldn't post on those sites.
Yes, yes. I would have to say that dating app strategy work is one of my favorite parts of the coaching world that I'm in. It's just so much fun to look at the different photos and prompt selections and wording choices in people's bios that they're deciding to put out there onto the world of dating apps. And so there's a couple of pieces that I just generally always advise. So the first one is having accurate and clear and updated photos of yourself on there. So things where you're super far away and you can't clearly see the person's face, maybe they're wearing sunglasses, or group photos especially, I really, really strongly suggest having photos that just showcase you. And if you don't have any recent or up-to-date pictures of yourself, maybe you could ask a friend or a family member or just a trusted person to help you take a couple of selfies for your profile, because your good pictures will take you a very, very far, especially if the rest of your profile is lacking. So having strong photos out the gate is always positive. Depending on which app you're using, so I know that Hinge allows you to have different prompt choices and prompt responses, so you're able to really showcase your personality and get creative with the different things that you are putting on your profile based on what's most important or meaningful to you. Other apps like Bumble and Tinder, it's kind of a free-for-all. It's just a blank text box that you could fill with anything. So your bio is really like the whole front door to somebody even considering if you're what they're looking for, aside from looking at your photos. So in your bio, it's suggested to include anything that, first of all, what you're looking for is really, really helpful, because some people are just looking for a casual hookup or a short-term something, and other people are looking for a long-term relationship or a life partner. So any clarity that you can give to people who are looking at your profile about what you're looking for is a plus, is positive. That's going to help narrow down who your dating pool is. Also making sure that you actually put effort into your profile. So not just having like a quote or one sentence or a string of emojis. There's really not many other dimensions that you have to get to know someone when you're looking at them through the screen on your phone. So whatever information that you can include to help it be an accurate representation of who you are and what you're looking for is going to be helpful. Keeping things positive on your profile, like not say, I see a lot of people will be like, I hate using dating apps. Well, then why are you here? people don't really want to out the gate be connecting with someone who's approaching dating apps as a negative thing. Like, yeah, they're not the greatest, but they are one of the most like incredible matchmaking tools that we do have available in our current time on Earth. So having a positive profile that's welcoming, that allows for prompts or conversation to be initiated, somebody reads it and they could comment something on what you mentioned, and that's your initiation for how your dialogue with that match will start. But keeping it positive, having good photos, and making sure that your profile is accurate about who you are and what you're looking for.
We got an email from a listener who writes, I am a 72-year-old woman. Any suggestions around dating for the older woman?
Okay. So, well, I mean, does she want to use dating apps? Is that an option for her? Does she feel like it's not?
She doesn't say, but let's presume that they don't want to be on the apps.
7 days personals. Okay. Easily. Yes, I even have an ad in the 7 days personals, and I am one of the youngest people that is on that site. But I've had some really like interesting, to say the least, dialogue and connections that have come from there. But 7 days personals can be a really great resource. And also just going out to things in your community, maybe letting other people in your life know, like trusted people that you are dating, and seeing if they have anyone in mind that they can set you up with, old school style, maybe a date where you don't know who the person is and you just show up there. But if you don't want to use dating apps and you are in the 60s, 70s, 80s range, it is definitely a little bit tougher if you're not going to be showing up in real life and meeting people. I would say, in short, the personals.
Now, speaking of older people who are looking for love, I want to bring on our next two guests. Joining us from Hartford, we have Lorinda McLeod and Francisco Reyes, who met at Bugby Senior Center in White River Junction. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you. It's McLeod and Reyes.
Oh, McLeod and Reyes. Thank you so much. So, Francisco, why don't you start by telling us the first time you met Lorinda?
First time I met Lorinda, I was at Bugby. I was a volunteer and just walking around, looking through the room and see, you know, just being nosy, what's going on in that room and stuff. And there she was in a little room, you know, doing all kinds of exercise. And then later on, you know, I could see she was serving lunch at Bugby. We're both a volunteer over there, and I just, I don't know, my eyes just keep a rolling wherever she goes, and that's how we met. Then I'd ask her to meet at, go somewhere out for a coffee, and we took it from there.
And I guess just like, let's rewind a little bit. How old were y'all when you met, and what was that experience like?
we're senior citizens at the senior center.
Yeah, I'm 68.
Yeah.
And she's
just about 75. So age doesn't make a difference. I'm very, very close to 75, but very active.
So, Lorinda, is dating different when you are an older Vermonter than it was when you were younger?
In many ways, no, because in the first case, I was married, actually, I was older, but in my 30s, but I was never one to really be out social a lot. I mean, I did things, but not, I mean, I wasn't at the bar and that kind of thing in my younger days. And so not. And actually, my husband had passed away about 3 years before Francisco and I met. And I wasn't looking. I mean, I'm older, I'm settled, I've got my life, and I wasn't looking, but he kept watching me, I guess, and then did ask me out, and I just said yes, you know. And it was very pleasant, And I agree earlier with the statement about going somewhere, even in my younger days I did that, going somewhere where you've got an exit strategy, you're in a public setting. I think that, and especially today, I think that's a better thing to do. But we were very comfortable, and we lingered over that coffee and had a little lunch. It was very pleasant.
And plus, you got to snag yourself a younger man.
Yeah, and this was about, this was about a year ago. So, and so we're definitely together.
So, Francisco, I want to ask you about, I heard that you had a specific item in your kitchen when you two first started dating that brings up...
Yeah, well, my first question when, you know, I mean, second time around, maybe the third time around when we, you know, wanted to get together and stuff, you know. So I thought instead of, you know, going out to lunch and stuff like that, I thought maybe either my house or her house, you know, that we'd meet. But the first question I asked her if she wanted me to come to her place to, you know, is does she have a cleaver?
He did.
And when she said she does have a cleaver, I said, that did it. Okay. Yes.
He came and cooked dinner. It was great.
I came over and started chopping with a cleaver, my goodness, and it was a-going.
So the cleaver is what brought you two together.
He likes to cook.
Most likely,
I like that.
Yes.
Awesome.
And
so,
we have a real, real good friend, too. You know, he passed, he left us, and he's a great man, and he's a very encouraging person for me to come to Bugby and stuff like that. And through his help, you know, that got me and Lorenda together.
Yes.
So what advice do you have? So we had a caller earlier who said that she is 72 and she was looking for suggestions for older women. What advice do you have for older Vermonters looking to date?
Hey, I would strongly recommend a senior center. I mean, they are not what they used to be of people older than us. And it's people are much more active and involved. I think a lot of that has to do with the internet. You know, smartphones and all this, but you get a lot more people there. It's not just the old single person that wants to go for lunch and a little social activity. There are so many activities going on at the senior centers now, you have to pick and choose which one you want to do. I mean, there's several I would be interested in, but I like, okay, I like this one better than that one.
Yeah.
They're very, very active. And
Bugby's like almost a dating center.
Oh, it's great.
You know what I mean? You know, it works for me. Either you're looking, you know, you're going to meet a good friend, try to get together, and, you know, or just be a very friendly person. There, mm-hmm. It's a good place to come.
All right. So
excellent.
To all of our seniors who are single and listening, Bugby is the place to be.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
It definitely is.
Come
we'll give it a plug.
Come one, come all to Bugby.
That's yes. Lorenda McLeod and Francisco Reyes of Hartford. Thank you two so much for joining us, and good luck in the rest of your relationship.
Oh,
all right,
it's solid. Thank you.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak out a little bit.
Absolutely. So, Marla, as you hear that story and you think about some of your clients who are, you know, maybe getting nervous about dating, does that help give you inspiration that, like, people can still find love?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love when people meet in real life and a senior center or just anything that allows people to connect with other singles in a very casual, unstructured atmosphere. That's still great. Like, my favorite idea or way of meeting people is still in the flesh and not using the apps. You're able to just get such a better feel of who they are and what their energy and personality is like. So I absolutely love that they both have had that opportunity and that they named that the dialogue and the energy around senior centers has totally shifted. That's also very inspiring and fun to hear.
So I want to get back to this question when it comes to online dating. And do you advise people to look up people they're about to go on dates with?
Yeah. Yeah. I think in this day and age, you'd kind of be remiss to not do that, especially because so many of us put our lives on the internet. There are dimensions of a person that you are able to find through social media in particular that you might not see on their dating app that maybe they left off of there. I know that as a woman, I primarily date men. I definitely look up men who I'm going on a date with, just to see if anything red flaggy pops up. But it is up to you. I do feel like there is this element of we can kind of create a narrative about the person that we're looking up that might not be super accurate. Maybe we might be pedestalizing or glorifying them, or maybe we're perceiving their profiles or whatever information about them on the internet in a way that's not accurate. So we can either create good narratives or not so good narratives about them. So just keeping your expectations in check and having an open mind, unless you see something that's really concerning and you decide that you don't want to go through with going on the date. But I think for better or for worse, most people are checking the internet when they are thinking of going on a date with somebody.
Now, we've talked about good dates, and what about bad dates? And I know that bad dates can range from funny to dangerous. So let's just get the serious part out of the way, which is, what are best practices to avoid dangerous situations when online dating?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think about bad dates, 9 times out of 10, they come down to 2 factors. There was a lack of a vetting process, or a very incomplete or loose vetting process, and there was no exit strategy, / the date went on way longer than it should have. That's when things start to get a little bit hairy. So in order to date, I guess I don't want to say responsibly, but in order to date in a way where you're covering your bases as much as you can before going into it, I always, always, always advise having a phone call or a video chat with the person before you meet up with them. I personally will not meet up with anybody unless we have exchanged words in real time beforehand. And what that'll look like for me, the natural process that I will use is we will connect on an app. I'm using Hinge right now, so that will be my example. So we'll connect on Hinge. Maybe we'll send a few messages back and forth. Messages might be getting longer. We might be adding more, so the conversation's flowing. And once I realize that that's starting to happen, I love voice notes, and Hinge allows you to send them. So I'll usually either send a voice note where I suggest a phone call, or I'll send a text, typed words, saying something along the lines of, looks like we both have a lot to share. I'd love to keep the conversation going and perhaps meet up. Are you available for a phone call or a video chat to talk more about what a plan can look like? And I'll use that phone call or video chat option to I'll pin creating our plan on that. So if they do want to meet up with me, they're not going to say, no, I don't want to talk to you. Let's just text to make a plan. That's never happened to me. They've always said, yeah, that sounds good. This is my number. When's a good time to have a conversation? So,
Yeah, go ahead.
So vetting before you meet up in real life to the best that you can, although it is not foolproof and nobody is at fault if they vetted a person and still wound up on a date that wasn't really a safe situation. But there have been times where I've had a phone call with somebody and then decided, nope, I don't want to meet up with them. And then I'll send them a message that I don't think there's a connection here and I wish you well. The phone call has saved me from many, many meetups with people that I know I would not have had a good time with.
Now, Kim emailed us and said, are people really this incapable of navigating this on their own? It feels like she's talking to adolescents. The big unanswered question is, how do you meet people? Dating apps suck. Bars are confined to drinking. Many people don't. And if you don't interact with the public at your job, your options are pretty limited. So I guess that's the big question, is if dating apps are off limits and you don't want to be at a bar, where can people meet each other?
friends of friends for decades. Friends of friends have been setting people up. And also, if you have an interest in something, or you're part of a group or a class, that can maybe you can meet someone in there, or maybe you can meet a friend, you can make a friend that they might know someone who they can set you up with that might be outside of your classic friend circle that you have, or folks on the dating apps. So if you're not going to use the apps, you have to show up in real life. You have to put the effort in. You have to be ready to get dressed and get ready and make a night out of it and go out, whether that's to a bar or to a concert or to live music, or to an event. But without the apps, the only way to do it is you have to show up. And a lot of younger people struggle with showing up because we're so used to relying on technology for forms of social and intimate connection in that way, especially knowing that the dating apps exist as something to fall back on for if you don't want to show up in real life. It really, the effort to actually put yourself together and leave your house or apartment and go out can be a real barrier for Gen Z and millennials in particular.
So how does anxiety manifest itself for those who are inexperienced with dating, and what can be done about it?
I think oversharing and undersharing. So maybe they might overshare about details that perhaps could have been reserved for conversations with a friend, or even kind of worse, even a therapist. So any sort of just like dumping or venting might happen if somebody isn't sure what to talk about on the first few dates. It can manifest as bailing or backing out of the plan at the real last minute, or showing up really late because they avoided getting ready for it. And then they realized, oh, I have to show up, but I'm 30 minutes late, but I don't want to cancel. Ghosting, so not being able to speak your truth and say that you're not interested in someone, just leaving them on read and leaving that loose end untied. So there's a lot of different ways that anxiety can show up. And a lot of the work that I do, a lot of the folks I work with do have dating anxiety because, like I mentioned, they're either a hot mess or they're just inexperienced. So we'll brainstorm strategies about what they can do when they feel like those things are happening. And they're able to also reach out to me for in-the-moment support. If I know that someone I'm working with is going on a date, I make sure that I am available if they need anything leading up to that, as well as to process the date after it's done.
Now, if anyone who has witnessed their fair share of dates gone wrong, it's bartenders. Whether you need a pick-me-up after a bad date or the last nightcap after a good one, bartenders are there to lend an ear and pour out a shot or a drink. With that in mind, our next guest is Kate Wise, a bartender at Hotel Vermont's Juniper Bar and Restaurant. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going, babe?
Oh, going great. So excited to talk to you and hear some of these stories. So, Kate, as a bartender, you get a front row seat to the dating world. What has that been like for you?
Oh, wildly entertaining. I mean, the bad ones are, in all fairness, more entertaining for us. Kind of the more awkward, the more just delicious it is to observe. But you can always kind of tell whether or not it's going well. I mean, obviously, body language is a big one. If they're facing each other, using their arms to chat, you can tell that, you know, it's maybe there'd be a second date. But the bad ones, you know, a little more stiff, and then just like inorganic questions. Just like, oh, what's your favorite movie? This is awkward. There's no flow to this conversation. So like when the conversation just kind of happens naturally, you can tell that it's going to be way better.
Can you think of any of some of the cringiest moments you've witnessed behind the bar when it comes to dates gone wrong?
Oh God, yeah, my favorite one. I used to work at Prohibition Pig, and I feel like that place had a ton of blind dates because it was so central to like Stowe, the Valley, Burlington. So it was a really nice midpoint meetup. And there was this one guy that used to come in and bring all of his blind dates there. He was not a good first date impression because I never saw any of the same women twice. And I could always tell it was him. He had this very large, gaudy piece of jewelry that was just heinous. But my favorite thing that I ever heard him say was, you know, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, mainly because I don't know the difference between the two, which is just really unnecessary information to offer on a first date. Like, you don't need to let them know that you're a moron right off the bat. Like, maybe charm them a little first and then let them know about your deficiencies. But yeah, we all had to walk away from that when we're like, oh no, honey, run away, run away.
As a bartender, how do you intervene? Or do you, if you see that the date's getting a little extra cringe?
There have definitely been times where, like, the gentleman will go to the bathroom and I'll be like, do you need an out from this? And for the most part, every woman would be like, I appreciate that. I'm comfortable. I can get out of this on my own. If I hear something, you know, really controversial, I will just kind of step in and voice my own opinion. So maybe the female doesn't need to have that awkward part of it on her. So I can kind of help sway some of the conversation my way, so it's not just all on her. So I try to play a wingman, and bartenders can be a really good wingman if you, like, go to your regular bar and knowing and let the bartender know that it's, you know, a first date or a blind date. You know, we can kind of help with the flow of things and also make you look good.
I love that, bartenders as wing people. Then from your perspective, what's the secret to a great first date as somebody who's witnessed all sorts of types of first dates?
I think it's kind of the same thing as, you know, getting good service at a bar. Be polite, say please and thank you, make eye contact, and tip well.
Anything else you want to add to the conversation of dating from the perspective of a bartender?
Ooh, be honest. Don't try to pretend to be someone you're not. I think we all put on some airs a little bit and try to present the ideal best version of ourselves right off the bat. But I think you can make more of a connection if you're just honest and show your humanity and humility. And not try to pretend to be anything else.
And before I let you go, what would you say is, like, the max number of drinks someone should have on a first date?
Ooh. Oh, that's so subjective. But I think three max, depending on, you know, if it's just dinner. Are you going to dinner and a movie, dinner and show? But I think three drinks maximum is a really good litmus test to see the person's tolerance, how they behave once they start drinking. I think, you know, alcohol is a bit of a truth serum. A drunken man's actions are a sober man's thoughts. So you don't want to go too far off the deep end either way, but showing a little bit of your true colors, I think, is a really good test on the first date.
That's Kate Wise, bartender at Juniper at Hotel Vermont. Kate, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. And then, Marla, when we were talking about these first dates, red flags, what are some big ones that people should look out for?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off the bat is an in-depth oral history of their past relationships or talking about their exes a lot. So if they're really... You can learn a lot about a person by how they talk about their exes with potential future partners. Also, anything that could be considered trauma dumping or just bringing general heaviness into the conversation, there shouldn't be any expectations of providing a lot of emotional support to your date, especially since you're just meeting the first time. Any complaining or negativity around things that could have been saved for friend or potentially therapist venting, like I said earlier. Somebody who doesn't, you feel like they're not really listening to you and they're just doing a bulk of the talking and it doesn't feel like there's an equitable amount of airtime between the two of you. Maybe they're cutting you off a lot, or what you say they have negative or condescending or challenging responses to. If you just feel like there was any time that you were together where something just in your gut didn't feel right, it might not have been a red flag, it might have been a yellow flag, just paying attention to that and trusting how you felt in that moment. Because when we reflect on our dates, sometimes we might be more prone to think about them in a more positive way, especially if we have been someone who's single for a long time and I don't want to say is desperate to date someone, but is really, really looking for a partner. You might have a little bit more wiggle room with your standards, but pay attention to how your body reacts to things that the person says or does on the first date. Yes.
How do people and what should people be doing to set boundaries for themselves and for others?
Yeah, knowing what your boundaries are before you go into situations is one of the best things that you can do to get to know yourself and what your comfort zone and your edge is. A book that I really, really love is called Set Boundaries, Find Peace. And it's written by a therapist named Nedra Tawab, who's very well known in the Instagram therapy world. And just reading about and understanding and doing journaling and reflective exercises on your own time to figure out what your boundaries are is a really, really great way to set yourself up for when you're in a situation where you feel like they're being compromised. You first of all know it's being compromised. You're not questioning, is this or is this not right? And it also just helps prepare you for how you can respond in a dignified way if there is a boundary violation that's happening.
We're gonna have to leave it there. Marla Goldstein, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Connor. Really nice to meet you, and enjoy your Friday, everyone.